about neurofeedback, people often ask me, well, once I go through this course of neurofeedback training and I stop, is it something that will regress? And no, because what we're doing is rewiring the brain toward normal healthy patterns that will not go away unless you have a significant insult or injury.
You're listening to the Holistic Nootropics Podcast, your home for holistic, evidence-based cognitive enhancement strategies. And now your host, Eric Levi.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Holistic Nootropics Podcast, where we discuss holistic cognitive enhancement. My name is Eric. I'm a functional nutritional therapy practitioner. And today on the podcast, I have Dr. John Silva. Dr. John Silva, DC, has 19 years of clinical experience helping people of all ages with a variety of chronic and acute conditions. His expertise is in the fields of functional neurology and functional medicine. Through continued clinical experience and postgraduate training, his practice has evolved over the years. His primary focus is on helping people with a variety of neurological conditions, and particularly those of the brain. It simply makes sense to get the brain functioning better since the brain controls and regulates every aspect of human well-being and health. The brain is responsible for and controls all cognitive, behavioral, and emotional functions, as well as all other physiological functions in the body. He considers neurofeedback training, detoxification, and functional medicine to be the foundational and the primary interventions for anyone suffering with a chronic health condition. So me and Dr. John Silva go deep in this podcast. We're talking about his experience in functional neurology. We're talking about the different tools that he uses with his patients to get to the root cause of their neurological problems. He really breaks down his use of tools like neurofeedback and QEEG, which are very, very interesting. I've often heard about neurofeedback, but I never really knew what it was. And Dr. John really breaks it down so that I can understand what it is and why it is such an interesting tool. And to be honest with you, I'm going to start doing this myself. It's not just for, it's for everybody, man. It's for people who have mental health issues, but it's also for peak performers, you know? The brain controls everything. And when you can physically hack your brain to make it work to as a program for success, I mean, that is an incredible tool. We talk about neuroplasticity, and when you can physically hack your brain to make it work to as a program for success, I mean, that is an incredible tool. We talk about neuroplasticity. We talk about the issues with the toxic mind and detoxification for the mind. We talk about his work with children and how he works with children to optimize their brain health. It's really a great podcast. I'm so excited for you guys to listen. Now, all of the show notes to this podcast, including the links and references to everything we discuss, can be found at holisticnootropics.com/podcast. And if you are new to the podcast, please remember to hit the subscribe button. It's right there in your phone. It's right there in front of you. Just take a second, pow, blast it with your finger there. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please remember to go on, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, and leave a 5-star review with a couple of really nice lines. If you're not listening on Apple Podcasts, go to Apple Podcasts or go to whatever podcast player you're listening to and leave a nice review. And if you are new to nootropics or want to learn more about using supplements, diet, or lifestyle to hack your brain for peak performance, check out holisticnootropics.com. And with no further ado, everybody, please enjoy my chat today with Dr. John Silva.
Practicing almost 20 years now here in South Florida, and started practicing traditional chiropractic. I'm a chiropractic physician, as I say, by trade. But my practice has evolved quite a bit over the years, primarily because of the number of different people and patients who present with more complex challenges. But really got into the realm of what I'm doing in the most recent years, which I would consider brain-based disorders or mental health conditions. Because of a family member's personal experience. And the last thing we wanted to do was to consider medications. So I just happened to be at a neurological conference in Orlando a week after this person's, it was actually my son's really bad panic attack at such a young age, and learned about QEEG, quantitative electroencephalogram, which is a way to diagnostically look at the brain and how the brain's functioning or not functioning well. So did some research on that, invested in that technology, gave us a clear understanding of why he was suffering, and then got into the therapeutic, which is neurofeedback training. And it's the core of what I do these days. So from there, and based on his success, we started to bring on a few patients who were treating with me at that time for functional medicine purposes, and started really digging deep into their cognitive, emotional, behavioral self, and found out that they were having some issues. So took on those first couple of clients and really got to know the neurofeedback, and it is just amazing. So it's transformed my practice. So predominantly what I'm doing now is in the realm of, you want to call it, functional medicine with an emphasis on functional neurology, and mostly as it relates to brain-based disorders, both kids and adults.
With functional neurology, is there a patient profile that responds better to that than others? Or do you kind of come at it where, well, everybody could benefit from this, and it's just a matter of how receptive the person is?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, just like functional medicine, functional neurology is, I mean, if you really think about it, we all have a neurological system, brain, spinal cord, and network of nerves throughout the body, which, I mean, if you really stop and think about it, is the primary control of our entire body, all its functions, and how we operate on a day-to-day basis. And if you look at any chronic health challenge from a neurological perspective, you're probably always going to find some deficit in neurological function, whether it be the brain, spinal cord, network of nerves, or both. So the difference between, I guess you would call it, allopathic neurology and functional neurology is typically we're going to do a bit more of an in-depth exploration of the nervous system from head to toe. We'll definitely look at brain function quantitatively through a qEEG and pull all that information together to find out where there's dysregulation in the brain nervous system, and to help that individual to restore as much as we possibly can. Now, unfortunately, I have worked with a few people in their later years who are already, in terms of brain disorders, like significant memory decline, cognitive decline, even Alzheimer's. And I've worked with a couple of people that unfortunately have gone too far down that slippery slope, so to speak, of cognitive decline, and it's hard to recover from. I mean, at best, we can try to slow the progression and maybe stop it, but to reverse that, that's why I really encourage people, especially when they start to notice in their early years, 20s, 30s, they're already starting to forget simple things like where they placed their keys or when they walk into a room, why they walked in there, to really take that to heart and pay attention to those little subtle signs and symptoms, because that's evidence that your brain is not functioning properly, and our younger years is the time to take care of it.
That's an interesting observation that you encourage people to make, because I think a lot of people just kind of tack that up to, oh, that's a personality quirk. You know, yeah. I opened the refrigerator and then I completely forgot why I opened the refrigerator. And, you know I've done this before. I've like left keys in the refrigerator before. And you're like, oh, it's just a stupid thing I did. But what you're saying is that could really be the sign of some kind of progression of some neurological disorder.
Yeah, it definitely can. And to touch on, again, our diagnostic workup in functional neurology is usually more comprehensive. And then more importantly is the interventions. So as a functional neurologist, we're always choosing to use natural holistic means to restore neurological function. So whether it be through nutraceuticals, things like neurofeedback training, which I'm sure we'll talk about here, detoxification, different types of neurological rehab exercises that people can do, oxygen therapy. I mean, there's a whole plethora of things. And especially as we advance in the neurosciences and we have more and more technologies and therapies emerging, I mean, there's just so many things out there. And what we find too is using a synergistic approach of multiple therapies at any given time is what really gives us some enhanced effects. Sometimes we can help people within a matter of months of what they've been suffering with for years. So it's a really neat perspective, and you never stop. I mean, one thing about neurosciences as a subdivision or subset of the healthcare industry is, I mean, you really never stop learning. I mean, we're discovering more and more about our neurological system and particularly the brain every single day.
So when you strap people up to these EEGs and you're scanning somebody from head to toe, and you're diagnosing or you're seeing these diagnostics, what are you seeing in the body? You know, are you looking at Are you looking at dysfunctions in the brain, but then like in the body, are you seeing, what kind of metrics are you working with?
Yeah, good question. So I'll give you a kind of a visual here. So we do, again, an electroencephalogram, or EEG for short, which has been routine practice as far as a diagnostic in the mental health and the mental health, as well as just general medical sciences for decades. What I perform in my office is a QEEG, or quantitative EEG. So what we're basically looking at is we have sensors placed on the scalp, and it's non-invasive. There's nothing emitted into the brain. We're recording electrical activity in real time with the person's eyes closed for a while, and then while with their eyes open. And we then record that data. It then gets statistically analyzed in a database based on age and gender. And then it provides me numeric values, but more importantly, visual maps that make it easier to review with somebody, that show the different regions of the brain. And basically what it comes down to is the activity too high or too low in specific regions of the brain, or multiple regions, or is there also lack of proper connection, or what we call coherence, from the different regions, particularly the left and right hemispheres of the brain. So that's all mapped out. Unlike a traditional EEG, where most medical neurologists, if you were to have these in their office, or perhaps you have a head injury, you go to a hospital and they run an EEG, they're looking for significant, what we call functional lesions, typically looking for seizure activity. If that's not found, you otherwise have a so-called normal medical EEG. We go a step above and beyond that by looking and mapping out the different regions and seeing, again, whether activity is too high or too low in particular regions. And what's really neat is in the last four decades now of having this ability, we can really start to understand why, for instance, a child could be suffering with attention issues and lack of focus and have that medical diagnosis of ADHD, which, by the way, is typically because of what we call high frontal theta activity. So a good portion of their frontal and prefrontal cortex is active in terms of theta brainwave activity. And that's essentially what we're doing. And what we're doing is we're measuring that electrical activity. Most people may have heard of the different brainwave states running from the slowest being delta, to theta, alpha, and beta. So that's all mapped out. And we should have certain ranges that activity resides in when we have our eyes open and closed. And again, if the activity is too high, it'll present itself in the diagnostic. So it really gives us a deep understanding into the cognitive, emotional, and behavioral issues a person might be struggling with.
Okay, so when you see the activity in the brain and it's high over here and it's low over here, and then a patient tells you, you know, I got these anxious feelings, I'm feeling depressed, I'm feeling bipolar, I have worry. Do you find patterns, like you see excessive amounts of activity, in a certain part of the brain, and then that often correlates with instances of anxiety, and you see that play out in the patients? Can you maybe give a few examples of that?
Oh, sure. Yeah, most definitely. And that's a great question. And yeah, I mean, with enough of research over the years, and even as a practitioner, the more of these QEEG analysis as you do, and you see the common traits, and of course you continue your studies, you see commonality. So when someone presents to my office with, for instance, anxiety, perhaps even full-blown panic attacks, we can typically expect to see on an EEG, and it's so predictable, usually 95% of the time, it'll prove itself on the EEG. But typically what we're going to see is elevated beta brainwave activity, particularly high beta. What we're also typically going to see is what we call a lack of symmetry. So we're looking at alpha and beta brainwave activity. So in normal circumstances, when our brain is functioning properly, we should have more beta brainwave activity in the left hemisphere. And then alpha, we should have more on the right side. So someone who's suffering with panic attacks will typically see a reversal of that. So that, in combination with looking at increased beta activity in different regions, or the whole brain for that matter, is a pretty good indication this person's suffering with anxiety. In fact, you get to a point where, and I've talked to a lot of practitioners who've been doing this as long as I have or even longer, we can almost get to the point where we can not even have to necessarily do a complete case history, which we definitely do, but not even talk to the person, just review their brain map. And you already have some pretty good insight as to what this person's struggling with. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Do you do like a case history in the sense that you map out the brain in this way, but then learn about their lifestyle and maybe about their environment and then say, you know, well, maybe there's something going on. Like, is everything genetic? Is everything environment? Of course, it's probably a mix of two. At what point does the patient say, okay, I know where this is coming from. I'm going to fix that.
Yeah. No, very good question. So again, my workup, I do actually meet with people before we even start the QEEG process. We do a very detailed history dating back to practically childhood if they're an adult. And definitely for kids, we want to know from practically birth to present time what's been going on, what exposures they have had to either physical, chemical, or emotional toxins or toxic stresses. That's important. So in addition to the QEEG and the same database that I upload this EEG data to be processed, also has computerized questionnaires. And we're in a time and place now with cloud-based technology and internet. I can actually have people complete these in their home before they even step foot in my practice. In fact, I'm at a point now too where we can do most of this right from home. Don't even have to come to the office. We can do this remotely. But anyway, we look at, we do a complete physiology assessment. So we're basically asking people of current and most recent symptoms, severity, the frequency. We also do conduct what's called a cognitive emotional checklist, which really looks at the traits of anxiety, depression, impulsivity, memory. And then we also do a more in-depth emotional behavioral analysis called an interactive self-inventory. All that data is compiled based on other, it's of course based on subjective input of the person understanding the question, answering it appropriately and honestly. But when they take the time to do that, that is also factored in with the QEEG analysis to give us a really, really comprehensive picture of, again, brain function and how it's manifesting in whatever their diagnoses or their conditions or symptoms are. So we really dig deep in history. Again, dating back to childhood or, again, for kids that come to my practice, we want to know from mom or dad exactly what the birth process looked like, what kind of exposures did they have, what does the current environment look like, and take that all into consideration. Because it's one thing to help then restore brain function through things like neurofeedback, but we also want to remove the sources. Try to deal with the things that have caused the brain to go offline, so to speak.
So do you see any patterns then with triggers that could trigger something in the brain, like excessive beta waves, maybe causing like anxiety or panic, or on the other side, depression, that you kind of see a pattern of in your practice, almost like you see this so much that you're like, this makes sense. Right.
Yes. Yeah. And again, it reflects. So we talked about anxiety. So on the other end of the spectrum, people who suffer depression, we're typically going to see dysregulation, as I call it, in alpha brainwave activity. Okay. So we'll see, again, alpha, instead of being higher on the right, it'll be reversed in a good portion of the brain and be higher on the left. It will see other deficits, and that will be a pretty good indicator that this person has a likelihood of suffering depression or depression-like symptoms. And what's interesting, really, I mean, this was never my training going through chiropractic school. And then until I got involved with this work, I never really thought of cognitive, emotional, behavioral health this way. But it really gives you a deep understanding as to why people suffer, again, anxiety, depression, and such. What I've really come to learn is a lot of people really suffer a bit of both. I mean, they're depressed individuals, but they have moments of anxiety, and the brain can function in that way. So, and what I've really come to understand too is how many people I see with those diagnoses or those traits of anxiety and depression, a lot of it, especially in our adult years, comes from prior emotional traumas, sometimes not even at a conscious level or memory recall. They could have suffered abuses as children, whether it be verbal. Of course, people typically remember the physical stuff, but it is pretty prevalent, and it has a toll on the brain. Even though we may not have conscious memory of it, it does have a toll in terms of brain function that can carry on with us throughout life, and that's what we can pick up on an EEG.
It's pretty amazing to think about how we carry these unconscious habits with us. And really, it all starts in the brain, right? So it's almost like the brain responds to something early in life. And maybe to you, it didn't seem like a big deal. Like it was something a teacher said to you, you know, or something you played sports and, or maybe a relationship when you were a kid or a friendship or something. And then it just learned this pattern in your brain. And over time, that pattern just kind of, it almost like sinks in grooves in your mind, in your consciousness, and starts building the habit of, well, this is how the brain responds in these different style, these different types of brain waves. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Or make sense?
Yeah, exactly correct. Yeah. And again, these are things that we have forgotten about growing up and through our adult years, but these what I call insults to the brain, okay? So again, insults are injuries to the brain, and they can come in the form of physical insults. So if we've had any car accidents, despite even hitting our head, just a simple whiplash trauma is enough to cause some insult to the brain and brain function. And then we have chemical insults, so eating poor diets, eating foods that are inflammatory in nature, being exposed to toxins, again, throughout our life. And then, of course, we have our emotional insults. And this is, again, what so many people come into my practice, and I'm sure most practitioners who work in the realm of mental health, so much of it is due to, again, these small insults, which we may not have conscious recall of. And, of course, a lot of people do come in, and they can definitely recall a lifelong of abuse or stressors, emotional stressors. And these things do take a toll on brain function, and we have a concept in neurology of neurons that fire together, wire together. It's the whole concept of neuroplasticity. So when you, again, repeat these insults, whether small or large, guess what? You're going to change neural patterning. But the great thing is, and this wasn't known up until the most recent years, the last 10, 15 years, that we thought that once your brain wired itself that way because of these physical, chemical, and emotional insults, there was no reversing that. That's what you're left with, and you're going to suffer these conditions and here maybe take a pill or two, try to quell the symptoms. What we know about neuroplasticity now is if the brain can wire itself that way, we can also unwire it and retrain it to wire itself in a better way and actually resolve these conditions, which is powerful.
And is that where something like neurofeedback comes in?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Neurofeedback, of all the things I've ever had and offered in my practice, is probably the most powerful thing that I've seen. And again, I've worked with people with all kinds of chronic conditions over the years, but the impact that neurofeedback has been just amazing, and how simple it is to do. I mean, for most people, they're either have their eyes closed listening to music, their favorite music as the music volume fades in and out, or they're watching a favorite video on Netflix or YouTube and the video image fades from dark to light and their brain is getting rewired. Now, it's a training process. It does take time and consistency, but over time, you can rewire those faulty patterns, take down high activity where it's too high to normal levels, and bring up low activity where it's too low to normal levels. And now we've just used neuroplasticity to our effect, and that's how I help people with, again, a plethora of conditions, resolve those conditions. Not just symptomatically reduce or quell the symptoms, but actually resolve the condition.
Can you explain exactly what neurofeedback is? Because is it a machine? Is it like software in the computer? Because I've heard people can do it at home. Yes. Is it like an app or something you can use? I'm not exactly sure what it is.
Sure. So let me explain it. So the process itself is using the same qEEG, but instead of using the brain with the sensors placed in the scalp, that brain computer interface, so to speak. And again, it's completely non-invasive. There's nothing emitted through these sensors into a person's brain. We're not manipulating their brainwave patterns. But basically, we're using the technology to provide the brain feedback in real time as to, again, where it's operating too high or too low. So I like to use visuals. So imagine that you're doing a neurofeedback session. And again, the great thing is in years past, we still do, of course, still run sessions in our clinic. But a lot of my clients and patients now, and I work with people throughout the world, have the ability through these new technologies to be able to do this in the convenience of their own home. And at home, we're using either a laptop or a tablet that has a amplifier that has the sensors that are placed on their scalp. And what they're doing is they're, I'll give you an example with an eyes, what we call an eyes open type neurofeedback or protocol. They're watching, and again, it doesn't matter the content of what they're watching, just something that is light and can keep them entertained for up to a half hour. What's happening during that process is the EEG is looking at the brainwave activity and it's being processed through the amplifier and the computer software. And when the brain meets certain criteria that we've got programmed into their protocol, which is specific to their needs based on their assessments and even their acute EEG analysis, then the brain gets what we call a reward. In fact, this whole process of neurofeedback uses what we call operant conditioning. So the reward for the person will be a full bright image of the video they're watching. So imagine that you're trying to watch, say, a sitcom for a half hour. But the difference with neurofeedback is that that image will go dark, not completely dark, but will get kind of dark, and then will get bright. And it will do this what seems to be intermittently and randomly during that half hour. But it's based on what the software and hardware is calculating at that time. So basically, again, you're watching the video, and when the brain kind of falters back to its old self, its faulty wiring, the screen image goes dark. Now, the brain does not like that on a subconscious level. Now, the first couple of times a person does this unconsciously, they're probably not going to like it either. They're trying to watch their favorite television program or YouTube video, and the screen's going dark on them. But your brain will figure out, hey, I don't like this. What do I need to do to brighten this picture? So it's going to reorganize its neural patterns to meet the criteria that we have programmed specific to their needs. And when it does that, screen image goes bright. Now, it may stay that way for 5 seconds. It may stay that way for a full minute or longer. But eventually, the brain kind of fatigues and goes back to its faulty patterns. So the screen image, again, darkens. The brain, again, recognizes this and says, all right, I don't like this. I remember I don't like this. What did I have to do last time to get the reward, full bright picture? And it reorganizes neural networks again. Screen brightness goes up. And it does this repeatedly throughout a typical half-hour session. But it doesn't stop with just one session. Just like going to the gym and developing strong muscles that you can visibly see and feel, you need to repeat doing this anywhere between 2 to 4 times a week. And that's basically how we use neuroplasticity to our advantage. And it literally rewires the brain function and even changes the structure of the brain. There's plenty of supported research and literature over the years showing just that.
I see that being a very powerful tool. That's amazing.
Yeah, so enter the realm, which is really exciting, of what we call peak performance, using neurofeedback for peak performance. So I do work with athletes, high-level executives, CEOs. They're just looking to try to squeeze every little they can out of their physical body. But, you know, collected is what rests between our two ears. Just like you said, I mean, yes, there are things that, like your meditation, we can and take time for ourselves, relax, mindfulness. But when we have a so-called biohack and neurofeedback, which has existed for decades now, we can take it to that next level. And just to expand on how the neurofeedback process works, I was explaining to you how, again, you're watching a video. And the great thing about this, especially for kids, especially those that have a tough time sitting still and focusing in attention, there's nothing that the person consciously has to think about or think about having to regulate. That's all they're doing is just being a passive observer in the whole process and just simply watching their YouTube video. So kids love this. I mean, how many kids these days aren't already logged into YouTube watching their silly videos? Now they get to do this in an environment that they're actually training their brain. Parents love it because their hyperactivity is calming down, they're focusing. But there's nothing the kids or adults are having to focus on or try to consciously control. They're simply just watching their video like they normally would. That's the great thing about it. So same thing for peak performance. We're just programming the training protocol to be a little bit different. And what we do for peak performance is try to encourage a fine balance between alpha and beta brainwave activity during the session. And it really, 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 especially the more sessions you have completed, it really helps to rewire, again, those faulty patterns that maybe hold us back in life or keep us from going to that next level. So peak performance is an exciting arena for this whole concept of neuroplasticity and, more importantly, neurofeedback as a tool to get there.
Hey, everybody. Just wanted to take a second to break away from the podcast to tell you about my favorite pre-formulated nootropic stack. That is Mind Lab Pro. I look at MindLab Pro kind of like a nootropic multivitamin. If you're a nootropic newbie, this is a great nootropic stack to start with. Even if you're an experienced nootropic user, maybe you've been putting together your own kind of different stacks using different nootropics together, and maybe you've hit a plateau, maybe you just haven't found the one that works right for you. Maybe you found something that worked right, and then you try to pair it with something else, and the whole thing kind of fell apart, and then that original nootropic doesn't work for you. MindLab Pro is pre-formulated. It's made by scientists, so they actually pre-formulate it with the right amounts, the right ingredients, 11 research-backed nootropic ingredients, by the way, that are proven to help boost your cognition, your memory, your focus, your mood, all those benefits you look for out of a nootropic, especially a nootropic stack, you're going to get with MindLab Pro. You've got acetylcholine, which is going to boost your acetylcholine production. It's going to boost dopamine. It's going to boost your focus. It's going to boost your memory, your processing speed. You've got phosphatidylserine, which is going to help you with nerve growth factor. It's got glucose metabolism enhancement. You've got the modulation of the HPA axis. It's going to help your energy levels. It's going to help your mood. It's going to help your stress levels, which is so important. You've got Bacopa monnieri. You've got rhodiola, an amazing adaptogenic herb. You got one of the most popular nootropic or holistic nootropics out there, lion's mane mushroom. You're getting that nerve growth factor, literally growing new brain, promotes healthy brain cell function. So many amazing benefits from lion's mane. You've also got things like maritime pine bark extract, and of course, N-acetyl L-tyrosine, which is going to help boost dopamine levels, and of course, norepinephrine levels. So if you need a boost in mood, if you're dealing with some depression, if you just need to be a little bit more lively, let's say you're kind of falling apart going out in social situations, assuming you're breaking your social distancing, you're going out, you need a little N-acetyl L-tyrosine. And then of course, one of the classic great nootropics, L-theanine. Hit that alpha brainwave, get into flow. If you're trying to pair something with coffee to take the edge off a little bit, or if you're just getting rid of caffeine in general, L-theanine is a great nootropic amino acid. And then you have the cofactors, the B vitamins to help really put everything together, B6, B9, B12, you know, it's like you can have all these amazing nootropics together, but if you don't turn on the fire, if you don't stir the pot, that's what the B vitamins do. They help get everything together so that it's metabolized, it hits your brain, it works the way it's supposed to do. Right now, we have a deal with MindLab Pro directly through holisticnootropics.com. You get 3 months of MindLab Pro with an extra fourth month for free. Just go on over to holisticnootropics.com/MindLab Pro. Again, holisticnootropics.com/MindLab Pro. Get one free month of MindLab Pro with the purchase of three. You can't beat this deal. The nootropic multivitamin, MindLab Pro, my favorite. Okay, let's get back into the podcast. I'm also wondering, you know, you had mentioned something like toxicity in the brain. So I'm wondering, maybe you could expand a little bit on that. Like, what kind of toxicity do you see a lot of in different conditions, especially something like ADHD or anxiety? You know, is there a specific pattern